difficult, one of the strangest parshas in the Torah is the parsha of Ben Sarah and Mira that's discussed in this week's parsha. The difficulties are already raised by the Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin, where there's an entire peirik in the Gemara in Masechah Sanhedrin which talks about this parasha of Ben Sarah and Meira. And a couple of blots into the peirik which discusses Ben Sarah and Meira, the Gemara raises a number of problems with the halachas of Ben Sarah and Meira. The Torah tells us that the Ben Sarah and Meira gets killed by Beis Din, gets stoned by Beis Din. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin defines what does a child have to do in order to become, or in order to be designated as a Ben Sarah Meira. And the Mishnah asks a question, and the Mishnah says, Me'emasai Chayev. When does this child become Chayev Misa, because he got the category, the halachic status of a Ben Sarah Meira? So the Mishnah says, Mishayechel Tar Timar Boso, when he eats a taltimer of meat, the yishta, and he drinks chatsi lug yain hoitalki, a half a lug of Italian wine. There's a machlokes rishonim as to whether he actually does have to drink Italian wine, and what happens if he drinks Australian wine or Japanese wine or wherever it may be. Shit the Rambam is that it doesn't make any difference what wine he drinks. Shit of other rishonim is that it does make a difference, it has to be specifically Italian wine. Italian wine, as far as the rishonim were concerned, was a very high quality wine, and therefore there are those rishonim that say that it has to be Italian wine. The Rambam seems to be of the opinion that the Gemara is using the example of Italian wine because it so happens that in the time of the Mishnah, Italian wine happened to be a good wine. But equally, if he drank any other type of wine, it would also be chayav. A tartimer of boso is a quantity. A chatsi lug of yayin is a quantity. A tarmiter of boso is actually quite a large quantity. It's a couple of steaks, a couple of large steaks. A chatsi lug of yayin, a lug is six cases. A lug is six glasses of wine. Chatsi lug with three glasses of wine. What is a glass of wine? According to the Rishonim, midoraisa, a glass of wine is 1.7 fluid ounces, which means that three cases of wine would be 5.1 fluid ounces of wine, which is basically a becha. It's basically a case that we use for medium-sized case that we use. Says the Gemara, because this kid ate two large steaks, and he drank basically three glasses of wine, Omra Teira, the Teira comes along and says, Yetzei le-Beis Din li-sokel, that we should stone him. There wouldn't be anybody left here if that was the case. Says the Gemara, obviously the chet of the Ben Sarah Meira in itself isn't enough that it should necessitate that we should kill him. Because at the end of the day, if you go through the Perek of Ben Sarah Meira And you try and work out, what did he do to this kid? So basically, what happened here was a very simple story. He wanted his two steaks and his glass of wine. That's what he wanted. He didn't have any money to go to a restaurant with a phony Hersher and buy himself two steaks and drink his wine with the dubious Hersher. So, seeing that he didn't have any money, he, quote, unquote, borrowed the money because his father left his wallet lying around and he helped himself to what? $30, $40, $50. He stole $50 and he went out and bought himself two steaks and a case of yayin. Now, as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, could be I'm making a huge mistake, but as far as I know, if you steal, in certain situations, you would have to pay kefil. You pay double what you stole. In certain situations, you pay dalad v'hei. You pay four times the amount or five times the amount. In certain situations, you get sold as a slave, right? But I've never heard, unless I'm wrong, that anybody gets killed in Torah law for stealing. Elamai, again, if you look in the Psukim, and you look in Perek Seira Umeira, he's called a Ben Seira Umeira. The rebellious child, as the art scroll likes to call it, if I'm not mistaken. So what did he do? He rebelled. He rebelled against his parents. Now, if you were trying to tell me that anybody who goes against his parents, or who takes two steaks, or drinks a glass of wine, or helps himself to $50 from his dad's wallet, gets stoned, then again we're left without Yeshua. So, says the Gemara, what's going on here? Says the Gemara, Mele if he would have cursed his parents, we've got a pasuk in the Torah, somebody who curses his parents. Mele if he would have hit his parents, we've got a pasuk in the Torah, what happens to somebody who's makir ovi v'yimai? Then the pasuk carries on, the pasuk says something else, and the Gemara discusses this as well. The pasuk says, you know why this guy is such a terrible guy? The parents come to Bezin, and what do they say? They say, he stole $50, he ate two steaks, he drank a glass of wine. And he didn't listen to what we told him. How many times should you have been stoned? Nobody gets stoned for not listening to what their parents told them to do. Elamai, says the Gemara, obviously we're not punishing him for the actions that he did. That can't be. However, says the Gemara, if you look at the combination of what happened here, if you take the complexity of the different things that are going on here, the Einish Amer Bekolenu, the eating a couple of steaks, the drinking the glass of wine, the Merida, the rebellion against his parents, if you take this whole package, they seem to be a signpost, says the Gemara, they seem to be indicative of the fact that this guy is really, really sick. But he's sick with a real serious disease. He's sick with a real serious type of cancer. It happens to be that the cancer that he's sick with is a spiritual type of cancer. He's got a spiritual cancer. And this spiritual cancer eventually is going to spiritually destroy him. Therefore, says the Gemara, Ben Seira Umeira Nidain Al Shem Seifai. The Ben Seira Umeira gets killed not because of the actual actions that he did, but because of what these actions indicate. These actions indicate something about him, and what these actions tell us about him is that there is absolutely no hope for him. And if there's no hope for him spiritually, then let him die, say Chazal. In the situation that he is now, where now he hasn't yet reached spiritual self-destruction, rather than allowing him to carry on until he self-destructs spiritually, will be worse off in that real world which exists after a person leaves this temporary world. Because, says the Gemara, these actions that he did are indicative of what's going to happen in the future. What's going to happen in the future, says the Gemara, is he's going to keep stealing from his parents in order to buy himself the steaks and the wine. But there's going to come a point in time when he's going to finish. There ain't going to be anything left to steal from his parents. In which case he's going to start stealing from other people. And eventually he's going to end up being a thief. And eventually, from thievery you get to murder, and from murder you get to other things. And therefore, let's put an end to it now, before it eventually gets there. That's basically a synopsis of what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. Now, if the Gemara is establishing a fact that from the complexity of actions that the Ben Seira Umeira does, right, from the entirety of it, if you take the mix of everything that he does, it's a signpost, it's an indication, it's a traffic warning, as it were, as to what's going to happen in the future. If you're going to say, like the Gemara says, that it's a expression of some type of spiritual sickness that this guy has, which is going to result in spiritual self-destruction, then logic dictates that what you have to do is you have to analyze each and every one of the actions that are discussed in the Torah of the Ben Seira Umeira, and say to yourself, well, what is this a signpost for? What is this telling me about him? What is this minor act that the guy did so significant that it tells me something huge about this guy? And therefore, what one really should do is go through every single detail and try and work out what it's all about. But then we'd be sitting here all night. So basically, we're not going to do that. But what I would like to do is to take one little detail which disturbs me most out of all the details here. And that is the chatzi lug yayin. The guy basically drank a glass of wine. Big deal. Now along come Chazal, and Chazal make this huge fuss about this. And Chazal say this is a signpost. And Chazal say this is an indication. And Chazal say this is telling us something, and it's telling us that this guy, forget it. He's going to spiritually self-destruct at the end of the day. All from a glass of wine. Come on. Come on. What's going on here? Where do we find wine mentioned in the Torah the first time? Now, it's true that there are Chazal, the Gemara in Brochus and Daf Mem, who are of the opinion that when Adam Arishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, thereby causing tragedy for himself and for the rest of humanity for eternity until Moshiach comes, right? Because everything is a result of the Chet of Adam Arishon. There is an opinion in the Gemara in Brochus that Gefen Hoyo, that the Eitz Hadas was a vine, and that Adam Arishon basically created wine and drank wine, and that was the beginning of the end. But that's a Chazal. That's not Mefurish anywhere in the Torah. Where do we find the first time in the Torah about somebody drinking wine? In fact, drinking wine to a degree where he gets totally smashed out of it. Right? The first time in the Torah that it appears that somebody drank wine was Noach. Noach has the dubious honor of being the first drunk in the history of mankind. I actually saw there is a guy who was a, I think he died, not from alcoholism, he was a professor of comparative religion in Los Angeles University. I can't remember his name, slipped my mind, and he wrote a book of basically his own ruminations on the Bible. It's like, I don't know, it's like a book of Shmuzen. It's like Musa Shmuzen. And this guy, I think he was a Catholic, actually. But it's very interesting. Very, very interesting. So one of his theories is, he says, why are sailors always drunk? Why sailors are famous, you know, the drunken sailor. Famous sailors are always famous for getting drunk. He says, why are sailors always getting drunk? So he's got this whole theory that it must be something to do with the fact that if you spend weeks or days or months on end looking at the sea, then obviously at the end, at some point in time, you're going to go off your mind, and the only way you can get out of this boredom is to drink. But he said, but then he goes into this whole theory, and he says, well, actually, he says it's because it's genetically implanted into mankind that sailors get drunk. Because who was the first sailor? Merv, he says. And he went out and got drunk. And so probably from that point on onwards, it's genetically. Now, I don't know if Chazal would agree with him, but it's an interesting thought. But that's the first time we find in the Torah the concept of somebody actually drinking wine and actually getting drunk. On that occasion from drinking wine, and that is used by Chazal as the prime example because of the results of what happened there. Anybody who knows the story of what happens when a person gets drunk and loses his mind, doesn't know what he's doing. The interesting thing is the following. There's a pasuk in the Torah. And the pasuk in the Torah is discussing a halacha. And the halacha is the following. That if you have money, which is money that resulted from maisa that you took from your money, but maisa that you had, which you converted into money by bringing produce and selling it, and converting Maisa Sheni and converting it into money, right? You took Maisa Sheni and you converted it into money. And the pasuk talks about the fact that you can do this, but then what you have to do is you have to take that money to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, and in Yerushalayim the pasuk says you have to buy with it food, and you eat the food in Yerushalayim. Now the pasuk, when it says that you buy with it food products, what the pasuk says is you buy with it. And the pasuk uses basic examples of food products, and the pasuk says, "Lachmecha v'meimecha." You buy with it bread and water. Along come Chazal, and Chazal say it doesn't mean water; it means wine. That the word "mayim" there in the pasuk means wine. The Gemara in Eiruvin says that from the fact that the Torah uses the word water, when it actually means wine, the Torah is coming to tell us something. What is the Torah coming to tell us? Says the Gemara in Eruvin the following. Kol she'ein yayin nishpach b'teich beisei kemayim. Anybody who in his house wine doesn't get spilt, poured. In other words, anybody who in his house there isn't a flow of wine like water. Anybody in whose house wine is not drunk like water is drunk, Einoi bichal brocha, won't see brocha. Now before Rabbi Kaplan gets all excited about this, let me try and understand what's going on here, because this is obviously a very strange Gemara. I think Professor Tversky and his anti-alcoholic tirades in the Jewish Observer wouldn't like this Gemara too much. Right? What does the Gemara mean when the Gemara says that if you have a house where wine isn't being poured like water, there's no bracha there in the house? And in fact, it's even more interesting. You find in Chazal seeming contradictions, right, backwards and forwards. On the one hand, Chazal tell us that after man learnt how to create from grapes wine, wine brought simcha into the world. Because it says about wine, Mesameach Elokim Ve'Anoshim. It's Mesameach Ribbono Shel Olam. There's wine which is poured on the Mizbeach, and it's Mesameach Anoshim, right? Drinking wine will create simcha. And in fact, wine became, certainly in the language of Chazal, and in fact also in the vernacular, in the way in which people speak, wine became synonymous with simcha. The Gemara says, Einem rim shira elo al yayin. If a person wants to express simcha, he expresses it through a case of wine. And because of the chashivas of wine, and because wine brings simcha to the world, therefore, even though wine is basically a fruit, says the Gemara in Brachas, you don't make the same bracha on wine as you make on all other types of liquids which are derived from fruits, right? On all liquids which are derived from fruits, what bracha do you make?
Shahakel.
On wine, it's kaveya bracha la'atzma, it has its own bracha, namely the bracha of Beiri Priya Gefen. The seeming conclusion from all this is that wine is something very, very positive, right? Stava choshev, it may be simcha le'olam, einem rim shira, elo al hayayin. Mitzad she'eni, Chazal tell us in Brachas, ein lecha dova ha'mevi yololo le'olam. There is nothing which brings tragedy to the world, va'al adam, and to a person, more than drinking wine does. And Chazal phrase it very succinctly in the Medrash Tanchuma when they say that yayin nichnas b'chol eva v'eva, a person drinks wine, it goes into every limb. V'haguf misrashel, and then he physically becomes weak. V'hadas mitalteles, and then his mind gets confused. Nichnas yayin yetzei da'as, wine goes in, common sense goes out. In other words, here you find already Chazal being negative about drinking wine. And the ultimate negativity of drinking wine is a Medrash Tanchuma in connection with Noach. The Medrash Tanchuma in connection with Noach says the following, that Noach came out of the Teva and he decided that he's going to plant a vineyard. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, Kasher bo Noach lito keren, when Noach came to plant the vineyard, Bos Sotan v'omalam lefanov, the Sotan came and the Sotan stood in front of Noach, and the Sotan said to Noach, Ma atonoteya, what are you planting? Omaloi, so Noach said back to the Sotan, Keren, I'm planting a vineyard. Omaloi, the Sotan said to him, Ma tivoi, what's a vineyard? What is a vineyard? What happens when you plant a vineyard? Omaloi, and they said to him, oh, a couple of things happen when you plant a vineyard. Number one, peiros of masukim, grapes are very enjoyable to eat. It's a sweet fruit. Bein lachim, bein yiveshim, whether they're overripe, whether they're not overripe, whether they're dried, you can eat raisins, they're very nice. It's a nice fruit. Second of all, said Noach, oisim mimenu yayin, you can create from the grapes wine. And says the Sotan to Noach, and so you'll create wine. Now what? Says Noach, back to the Sotan, Hamasameach levavis. Wine is very good, it makes people happy. You see, because the pasuk says, Yain yisamach levavinesh. The drinking wine makes a guy happy. Omalei ha-Sotan, so the Sotan said to him, you know what? If it's such a great thing, Bonishtata shneinu bekerem, I want to be a partner. Let's plant the vineyard together. Noach says, fine, no problem, 50-50. Great. They made a partnership. Continues the Medrash, and the Medrash says the following. Ma'asa Sotan, what did the Sotan do? He said to Noach, hang on a minute. Hang on. We're going to plant this vineyard in a certain way. Says Noach to the Sotan, how are we going to plant the vineyard? Says the Sotan, I'll tell you how we'll do it. Hevi Keves, he bought a sheep. He brought a sheep. The Horagoi. He killed the sheep. Where did he kill the sheep? Tachas ha-gefen. In other words, they dug a hole in order to plant the vines. The Sultan said, first, 1 minute, slow down. First of all, we're going to shecht a keves. We're going to kill a keves. He killed the keves. Where did he kill the keves? In the hole that they dug in order to plant the vine. He says, Noach, you finished? He said, no, hang on a minute. Says the Medrash, holach, he went, hevi, Ari, and he came back with his pet lion. Noah said to him, what are you up to? He said, hang on a minute. V'horogoy. He killed the lion. Where did he kill the lion? Says the Medrash, he killed the lion in the hole where he's going to plant the vine. Says Noah, can we now plant the vine? Says the Sultan, no way. We haven't finished yet. So Noah says to him, where are you going? He says, hang on. Hang on, patience. Says the Medrash, off goes the Sultan. Hevi chazir. He brings back a chazir. V'horogoy. And he kills it. Where does he kill it? In the hole. Right, we've got the sheep dead there in the hole with the blood pouring out all over the place, and we've got the Ari there in the hole with the blood pouring out all over the place, and now we've got the Chazir there in the hole with the blood pouring out all over the place. Said Noah to the Sultan, can we plant the vine? Says the Sultan, no way, we haven't finished yet. Says the Medrash, what did the Sultan do? Halach v'hevi kof. He went and brought a monkey. He turns up with him, he's got the whole zoo here. He turns up with a monkey. Noah says to him, what are you doing? Says the Medrash. Sultan turns around to Noah and he says, patience. Horogoy. He killed the monkey. Tachas Akerem. Where? In the hole that he's going to plant the vineyard. The Heitifu Domom the Oisei Kerem. And now you've got the blood of the sheep and the lion, the Chazir and the monkey, all in the hole, which they then put the vines into. V'hishkuhu midmehem. And the vine was created and grew from the fact that it was irrigated by the blood of the sheep, of the lion, of the chazir, and of the monkey. Ask the Medrash, what's going on here? Why did the Sultan do this? Says the Medrash, because the Sultan was trying to tell something to Noach. What was the Sultan trying to tell to Noach? Says the Medrash, Romazloi. This was all symbolic. He was trying to get a message across to Noach. Says the Medrash, sorry, what was the message that he was trying to get across to Noach? Says the Medrash, the message that the Sultan was getting across to Noach was the following. Kodim sheish tehodim, before a person drinks wine, hare hutam kekivsa zu. He's a tomim, like a sheep. A sheep always represents purity, simplicity, tmimus. That's what a human being is. A human being is created as a tomim. He's created as a normal being. She'eino yedas klum. He doesn't know anything about that which is negative in the world. Kerocha lifnei geizneo ne'elomo. Like a lamb. It's quiet, timid, refined. That's what a human being is, be'essence. In his essence, a human being is a refined individual. Shosa kahigen, says the Medrash, give him to drink. Harehu gibor. All of a sudden, he becomes a gibor. Right? He can't open his mouth. Touch him, he'll fall over. Give him to drink. The alcohol goes to his head. What's the first thing? He becomes a tough guy. And start up with me. All of a sudden, this guy couldn't open out his mouth before. No, he's Moshe Grace. All of a sudden, Giver Kiari, Vayma, and he's mamish like an Ari. He's like a lion. First thing he starts, what do drunks do? They start talking. First thing. If you find a drunk, who when he becomes drunk stops talking, put him in a glass case in the museum. He's one of a kind. Drunks always talk. They talk and they talk and they talk. And what do they talk about? They always talk about themselves. Ein, says the Medrash, k'moisei be'olam. There's nobody like him in the world, and he tells the whole world about it. The whole world has to hear it. Kivin sheshasa yaisa, give him a little bit more to drink. He becomes Aisari. He's no more is he the powerful guy who can do everything. No more is he talking about himself the whole time non-stop. What is he? Kechazir. He starts acting like a chazir. Mislachlech. He basically dirties himself up and meiraglayim with urine, with bedovaracha, and with excrement. That's stage two of getting drunk. What happens next? He gets really drunk. Says the Medrash Nishtaka. Now he's really drunk. What happens? Nasa kekaif. All of a sudden he's acting like an ape. Aymed, standing, marakid, he's dancing, mesachek, he's laughing like an idiot. There's nothing funny. He's laughing. Meitzi lifnei hakol nivlus aper. Starts using foul language. Does this sound familiar? Ve'eino yedeo mayase, and he's got no idea what he's doing. In other words, here we find the other extreme. Here, on the one hand, we find Chazal talking about me, shebiyah bebeis elei mishpach yayin kamayim, doesn't see a ray of bracha. Here we're telling you that from a set tomim, right, you become a combination of a chazal and a kof. Right? That's basically what you are, a synthesis of an ape and a pig. Either one or the other. Make your mind up. When a person is thirsty, a person is going on a hike, and he's walking and walking and walking, and he suddenly realizes that he's run out of water, and it's hot, and he's shitting, and he's walking, and he's thirsty, and he's thirsty, and he's thirsty, and he suddenly gets to water, he starts drinking. And the truth of the matter is, and the Pasuk says it already, that the most pleasant thing in the world for somebody who's really suffering from thirst is to eventually get to water and to be able to drink water. Pasuk talks about mayim korim al nefesh ayefo, cold water on a tired person is the best thing in the world. Equally, any liquid would do the job. However, there's a big difference between water and between wine. What is the difference? The difference is very simple. The difference is that a person will only drink water when he's thirsty. And there will come a point where his thirst is quenched and he can't drink any more water. And if you make him drink any more water, or you force him to drink any more water, it's not a tainug anymore, on the contrary, right? It becomes suffering, right? When you get to my age, and you have to take medical tests, and they tell you drink, and drink, and drink, and drink, and drink, right? It's not geschmack. It's not geschmack at all. Forget about what the results are. It's not geschmack at all, right? No way. Water, there's a limit to what you can drink. Wine, say Chazal, is the opposite. Wine, migra gorer. The more you drink, the more you want to drink. That's the nature of wine. Wine is megara, right? Wine inspires you to drink more. Wine arouses a taiva for more wine. And the danger of wine is that when you start, it's difficult to stop. Therefore, along comes the Torah, and the Torah says, wine has its positive side to it. There is a positive side to it. The whole bias, any house where wine is poured like water, there's bracha in the house. If you treat the wine like water, then there's bracha in the house. There is a very interesting phenomenon that we find in Parshas Noach. If you look in Parshas Noach, you'll see something very interesting. What does the Torah tell us? The Torah tells us that Noach came out of the Teva. And then what happened? So the Pasuk starts and the Pasuk says the following. Vayochel Noach Isho Adomo. Noach, who was an Isho Adomo, he debased himself. Vayita Korem, and he planted a vineyard.
Vayesht minayayin, and he drank from the wine. Vayishkar, and he got drunk. Vayizgal v'saychala, and he was rolling around on the floor in his tent. Now, if you look at this pasuk, you'll see something very interesting. The pasuk keeps on saying the and vayochel noyach, vayitakerem, vayesht minayayin, vayishkar, vayizgal. Right? It keeps on saying vov, 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 vov. Along come Chazal, and Chazal says something which is very strange. It's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that have a look in the Pasuk, and I did it, and you can believe them, it's true, and you'll find that the Torah says Vov, 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 Vov 13 times. Very nice. Now what? Along comes Taisus, and Taisus says, wrong! Says Taisus, I counted it. The Gemara is wrong. It's 14. Says Taisus, well, it's true it's 14, but one of them's not counted. What's the one that's not counted? Says Taisus, the one that's not counted is, it says in the Pasuk, that in connection, Vayikach Shem Vayefes is Asimlo. That vav we don't count. Who cares how many times it says a vav? And why is it that we don't count that vav? What's going on here? So I once saw years ago pshat from the Kalish Aros, or Merdeka pshat, Jessica Lipschitz. I think he says that Hashem's father was the Rav of Lublin. He says in Hebrew grammar, the letter vav has two functions. There are two types of vav in the Hebrew language. There is a vav which is a vav achibor. There is a vav which means and. It joins the second part of the sentence to the previous part of the sentence. That's one type of vav. But there's another vav which plays a grammatical role. It turns the past tense, it turns the future tense into the past tense. Yomar means he will say. Vayomar means he said. When you put a vav at the beginning of the future tense, it turns the future into the past. It's called a vav ahipuch, a vav which turns the future into the past. Said the Lublina Rav, Agvaldik Avov. He said there are 13 times in the pasuk talking about the drunkenness of Noach, where the Torah uses a vav. It's a vav ahipuch, because that's what drink does. It confuses you. The present becomes the past, and the past becomes the future, and the future becomes the present. You don't know where you are, you know where you're coming, you know where you're going. There's one occasion where it's a vav achibo, says Taisus. Therefore that vav you don't have to count, because that vav is taka vav achibo. All the others are a vav, which are a vav, which is a hippoch. All the way through Tanakh, wine is used, the word yayin is used as something which indicates in Yonei Olam Hazeh. Yayin is always something which we're talking about in Yonei Olam Hazeh, we talk about yayin. Why? Because in the same way as wine confuses, the Yonei Olam Hazeh confuses people as well. You get too involved in it and it confuses you spiritually. Judaism is different from every other religion that exists in the world. Judaism is singular in one point. It differs in one point from every other religion in the world. Most religions, the vast majority of religions, assume that the highest darga that a person can get to is abstinence. Is when a person keeps himself away completely from something. If you can deprive yourself from something for long enough, you will reach great spiritual heights. Become a monk, become a priest, a Catholic priest. Deprive yourself of females. Right? I mean, they took it a bit wrongly and they just switched it to males, but basically the idea was to deprive yourself from females and males.
then you will reach great spiritual heights.
Fast! 50 days and you will be able to lie down on a bed of nails if you so wish.
All religions have this thing about if you can keep yourself away from something,
that's the ultimate. Deprive yourself completely. Along comes the Torah, and the Torah says no such thing. If you think about it, there is nothing in the Torah which is asur. There is no act that a person can do which is asur. It just depends when, how, and who with, or what with. That's all. But to say that something is totally, completely, and utterly asur, in terms of the maisa, in terms of the act, there is no such thing. And therefore man was created with a desire to do. That's the way in which man was created. Man was created with taivas. Man was created with a desire to do. Why? Because the world couldn't survive if we didn't all have within us an inbuilt feeling that we want to do things. There would be no invention in the world if people didn't have this feeling that they want to do. There would be no creation in the world. The world would never have improved. We'd still be rubbing two stones together to light a fire. If it wouldn't be the fact that man constantly has taivas. He wants to change, he wants to do better, he wants to do things, he wants to experience things. It's a necessity. You can't have an aliyah ruchni unless you have a taiva. You have to have a taiva for ruchnias as well. There would be no mankind, right? The whole of reproduction is based on taiva. Right? Taiva is an essence within the human being, it's a necessity. But it has to be within parameters. It has to be within criteria. All of us have personalities. We're a complexity of personality. We have what's called midos. Why is it that human characteristics are called midos? What does the word mida mean? Measure. Because everybody has characteristics. The question is, how are you going to use them? In what measure are you going to use them? The Gemara says in Eiruvin, Kolam isyashev biyeinoi, meaning, somebody who drinks wine, says Rashi, and he doesn't get drunk. In other words, somebody who drinks a quantity of wine, which is normal. Yesh boi das shivim skeinim. He gets the das of shivim skeinim. Yain nitam b'shivim oisius, v'soid nitam b'shivim oisius. Nichnas yain yetzei soid. What is the soid that goes out when a person drinks wine? The person says soid Hashem nireyov, and Chazal say, what does soid Hashem nireyov mean? Teira. Teira is called soid. Why is Teira called soid? Because soid is shivim, and the shivim plan in the Teira. Gematria of Seid is Shivim, and the Shivim Panim of Teira, therefore Seid means Teira. If a person drinks uncontrollably, Nichnas Yain Yetei Seid, then the Teira goes out of the window. But if it's Bemido, if it's Kamayim, there's no problem. Absolutely no problem whatsoever. There are two ways in which you can look at the world, and this is where I take issue with the learned professors. There are two ways in which you can look at the world. You can educate people, or you can train them. You can train an elephant to play a trumpet. You can train a lion to do ballet. You can't educate a lion to be a ballet dancer. You can't educate an elephant to blow a trumpet. You can train him. You can train a monkey to do all sorts of things, but he doesn't turn into a human being because he knows how to do the same things as a human being. Because you can't educate a monkey to be a human being. Because a monkey is a monkey and a human being is a human being. You can train people. You can say, that's it. It's also, it's prohibited. Don't go anywhere near it, you're not allowed to go anywhere near it, and that's it. That's one way of doing things. Or you can educate people. Torah doesn't train, Torah educates. The Ben Seira Meir is a lost cause, not because he drank a glass of wine. Nobody is a lost cause because they drink 5.1 ounces of wine. That's not the reason why the Ben Seira Meir is a lost cause. Along comes the Torah, and the Torah says something else. The Torah says it's a signpost. This one case of wine which the guy is drinking is telling me something about the person. And what it's telling me about the person is, let's get rid of him now because he's going to self-destruct anyway in the end spiritually. Where do we see that? We don't see that in the fact that he drank that quantity of wine. It's not a sheer yayin that if you drink the sheer yayin, boom, you get stoned. It's the attitude. There are ways in which you can drink 5.1 ounces of wine and you can tell straight away why the guy is drinking 5.1 ounces of wine. If he's drinking the 5.1 ounces of wine because it's Shabbos, and the guy's mixed l'chaim Shabbos, or because it's an avodah, or because it's olam hazeh, or because he's got no shaykhes to tell and he's going to end up being a chazir and a koif, going through the stage of an Ari and telling everybody how great he is. Not the amount that he drinks, the way he drinks it. If the guy is sitting by a Friday night meal and he pours himself some wine and he drinks some wine, I'm not telling you my mind, the Torah's got nothing against that at all. The Torah has nothing against that at all. That's not Ben Seira Meir. That's a guy who's sitting by a Shabbos meal and he's drinking some wine. But if it becomes a whole avodah, there has to be in a certain type of glass, and it has to be in a certain type of wine, it has to be in a certain type of way, it has to be a certain type of bottle opener, and it becomes a whole thing. Then comes the Torah, and the Torah says, finito. Kill him now. Because anyway, he's going to spiritually self-destruct at the end of the day. If you see by the individual that his whole approach to life is the absolute nullification, the total absence of any concept at all of proportions, of measurements, of midos, of knowing how much, when, how, what, where. If he's missing that, he's not going to make it in life, says the Torah. Because that is the basics, that's number one. And yayin doesn't necessarily mean wine, it's not only drinking wine, it's in everything. Everything. We are all human beings. We all have problems. There isn't a person sitting in this room who can really say, with all honesty, that he has the ability to sit and learn every single second of his waking hours and enjoy it. And if he does say it, he's a liar. We're all human beings. We sometimes don't want to learn. We sometimes haven't got a cheshit to learn. It's not a problem. We're not holding yet by the vehigisa bayom and balayla. But the question is there a proportion in it? Is there a measurement in it? Are we determining to ourselves the fact that there are certain obligations that we have? And then, over and above those obligations, if I want to keep myself normal, I have to let off steam. Fine. If a guy wants to leave yeshiva and let off steam, fine. But again, the question is it within limitations? If it's total efkeris, if it's without any limitations whatsoever, whether it's in the yeshiva, whether it's out of the yeshiva, there's no hope for him. He's not going to get anywhere. That's what this nekuda, this point in the parasha of Ben Seira Meir is teaching us. It's teaching us the fact that there is nothing which is categorically asa, there is nothing which is categorically muta. It's all a question of knowing my limits, knowing my proportions, and determining those proportions in the proper manner. The minute that our whole perspective on things is a perspective of no proportions, a perspective of I can do what I like,
nobody tells me what to do, then we're lost. But that's something which can't be imposed on the outside. Because imposing it from the outside means you're being trained, not that you're being educated. Education is to be able to come oneself to that understanding and to that realization. And that's the Musa Haskel, and that's the point that we have to learn out from this inyan of the Shtias Kais Yayin. On a different occasion, maybe we'll talk about some of the other things. There's chants in the dining room. My share.